Our next guest is new to the Power Hour, and we're very excited to welcome him, Steve Turley. Dr. Steve Turley is a doctor of cultural anthropology and New Testament studies. He's recognized all over the world for his lectures and has been quoted in many Christian publications. He has a flourishing YouTube channel with a lot of subscribers, Dr. Stephen Turley. TurleyTalks.com is his website, and we're going to talk about quite a bit here. We're excited to have him. Dr. Turley, welcome to the Power Hour.
Oh, thank you so much, Daniel. It's my pleasure to be here.
You know, I've kind of been away because of 4th of July, family reunions. I come back and I half think the world has gone crazy here. The topic the topic that we got that you sent to and talked to Catherine, it's Antifa ringleader and BLM activists arrested as Trump and the GOP begin to crush the far left. Let's discuss, let's start there.
Yeah, we're beginning to see Trump engage in a strategic pivot. You know, for a while he was looking pretty weak because largely because of our federal system of delegated jurisdictions. You basically had a bunch of, you know, Democrat mayors and governors willfully relinquish their law enforcement responsibilities just to make Trump look bad. And so for a while it was, you know, I said for a while it looks like he was just speaking loudly and carrying a flimsy twig. But as it turns, you know, but as it turns out, now we're seeing him pivot over the last couple of weeks, and it's been pretty extraordinary. So I'd like to say he's sort of combining vengeance with vision, as it were, if you want a little alliteration there. So the vengeance part is bringing the full force of federal law, you know, the hammer getting smacked down on Antifa thugs and BLM rioters. On the one hand, Bill Barr has launched Operation Legend, if you've been following that, where they deploy federal agents and U.S. Marshals to quell city surges in violence. Trump signed the executive order mandating 10-year prison sentences for anyone convicted of attempting to desecrate national monuments. Indeed, a ringleader of Antifa, a fellow by the name of Jason Charter, who he was involved trying to pull down the Andrew Jackson statue in Lafayette Square in D.C. He's been arrested in Utah. BLM activist named Jesse Taggart was arrested and charged with attempted aggravated murder and aggravated assault. In Des Moines, you have a number of BLM arrests. So it's going on all over the country. And, of course, the Georgia governor, Brian Kemp, has also declared a state of emergency there to deal with the violence, the surge in violence in Atlanta, because the mayor there turned out to be such a sympathizer with BLM, but eventually had to, in many ways, distance herself from them. So there's sort of the vengeance side of things. But then the Mount Rushmore speech gave us the vision strategy. And what Trump is doing, really, that speech was astonishing because he gave us this beautiful, unifying vision of civic nationalism, where we once again reaffirm our national sovereignty and the things that we hold in common, common borders, a common economy where we protect our jobs, we don't ship them overseas so that Beijing is in charge of our pharmaceutical manufacturing, and our common culture that unites us together in a sense of a common destiny. And he was able to do that in a way that he contrasted brilliantly with the absurd divisions that we're seeing with the reawakening tribalisms going on in our nation. So I think that twofold combination, sort of vengeance using the full force of the law and vision, giving us a magnificent unifying sense of civic nationalism, is going to be very, very powerful going into November.
What is our common culture? How would you describe it?
Yeah, well, most scholars would argue it is a civic religion of basically Anglo-Protestantism. It's a common what even though we were divided in the Civil War, one of the reasons why we had Confederate monuments was because there was a sense, nevertheless, we were brothers and we were fighting each other, and that was terrible. But we were brothers, and we honor brothers. We honor brothers in a common faith, in a common sense of destiny and obligation. And so we've always had a relatively theistic conception of our common civic faith. It makes room very comfortably for overtly Christian sentiments that you get more in the South, but also more, you know, kind of the non-defined deistic sentiments you'll get, for example, in the Northeast or the Pacific Northwest. And this is what gave us a common sense of obligation to one another. We were obliged to treat one another with a certain level of respect. This is exactly what Martin Luther King could tap into in his I Have a Dream speech. He could tap into this common culture that we all have rooted in the Old Testament prophets and given its universal expression in Christianity in the New Testament. And but now, because of the hostility that the courts were, I found a fascinating stat. Prior to 1940, the Supreme Court used the term separation between church and state only like a dozen times. After 1940, they started using it several thousand times. So something happened in 1940, sort of a fixed historical marker where our Supreme Court became radically hostile to that common Christian faith culture and really did everything they could to marginalize it. The good news is I think it is coming back, but it's stumbling along, unfortunately, because it's been so thoroughly privatized over the last few decades.
I have been really alarmed, not, you know, Confederate. I grew up in the South, so when you start talking Confederate flags, a lot of people died. A lot of Americans died for that Confederate flag. And so it's not, it's been turned into a slavery issue solely, which people from the South, if you're really from the South, they don't see it that way.
Right.
I've been more alarmed. Well, now we're going to take down Robert E. Lee statues. Now we're going to take down Thomas Jefferson statues.
Of course.
That is the
stop.
Issue. Right. Yeah. Where does it stop? Thomas Jefferson, of course, wrote the Declaration of Independence. This is the most revolutionary political document we've ever seen. It's probably the greatest moment of mankind in 2,000 years is the Declaration of Independence. Is this where this is? I mean, what are we doing here attacking Thomas Jefferson?
Oh, and it keeps going. They're knocking down statues of abolitionists and Frederick Douglass, who was a black former slave. What we're seeing, I think, is pretty self-explanatory. I think we're seeing a war not against the Confederacy, not against racism, not against this or that. We're seeing a war against Western civilization itself.
Ooh.
And it started in the 1960s. It really at least started to come to the surface in the 1960s, where we started replacing our classical liberal arts culture, and liberal in the, you know, the classic term,
yes.
Right,
yes.
A freedom of the human
thought.
Mind,
yeah.
Right, to be able to think rationally and in a dignified
logically.
And educated way, yeah. And we had a curriculum that was very much centered on a distinctively Western civilization conception of the human person. And this would be the notion of, you know, a common dignity to all people. Again, that's why when we fall short of that, we can be called back to being corrected on that, where you get the sense that we are, we have a mutual obligation to this divine meaning and purpose all around us. So when we create art and music and architecture, we celebrate beauty, a beauty that's eternal and that doesn't have a beginning or an ending. You can't get enough of it. There are some things in this world, like love, for example, that have no limits. You never say, okay, yeah, that's about enough love. We don't need anything more than that. These are infinite eternal values. And then we had a culture that tried to instantiate those values in our architecture, art, music, poetry, our cities, our urban planning and the like. Just think of the way Europe did it with the cathedral at the center. And in the 1960s, you saw a movement more or less known as cultural Marxism that ushered in what they called the multicultural movement that was incredibly disparaging towards Western civilization. And you have people like Herbert Marcuse of the Frankfurt School, who came on over, I believe, in the 1930s, started teaching at Columbia University. And he basically argued that, you know, cultural Marxists, what they do, what they argue is that Marx was wrong. The struggle between the proletarian and the bourgeois is not at the level of class or economy. It's actually at the level of culture. It's the first world versus the third world, as it were. And so he believed that Western civilization could be overthrown if you put together a coalition of the oppressed minority. And that's when he ushered in something called repressive tolerance. You can actually read it online, his essay on tolerance, Herbert Marcuse, M-A-R-C-U-S-E. And many scholars believe this is the origin of political correctness. It goes back to the 1960s, where Marcuse argued that anything that was liberal and minority, anything, that's got to be tolerated. And then anything that was conservative and majority, that needed to be repressed. And so you get this notion of repressed tolerance in the curriculum, and you've sown seeds now for four decades, these radical cultural Marxist professors who have taught our students, and this is key, they've taught our students that you're not educated and you're not successful unless you disparage and hate Western civilization.
The 1960 was also the that's about the time in America where prayer got out of school. You mm-hmm. see the Darwin of the late 1800s. You know, you mentioned law. The idea of evolution, if it's true we evolved from monkeys, well, then why can't law evolve? Why can't our standards evolve? Why can't culture? It seemed to permeate everything.
Right.
We're seeing the result of this. It's kind of slow moving, but 60 years later, from 1960, we see the situation we're in. Where are the Christians on this?
Yeah, it's a tough one. Well, again, if we're looking internationally, we're seeing a revival of Christian civilization and Western civilization, particularly in Eastern Europe, Central Europe, Eastern Europe, and Russia. That, it's astonishing when the Soviet Union collapsed on December 25th, 1991. God has such a sense of humor. You know, the most atheistic regime on the planet officially ends on Christmas Day. So December 25th, 1991, Russia only had about 6,000 churches left for a nation of 140 million people or so. That's crazy. Today, here we are 30 years later, and it has over 40,000 churches. It's more than 3,000. Yeah, it's more than 1,000 churches a year being built. That's three new churches opening every single day in Russia. And we're seeing a lot of the same thing in Eastern Europe. We're seeing it in Central Europe with Poland and Hungary. Actually, Poland just had their presidential elections yesterday, and the nationalist populist conservative Andrzej Duda won re-election again for the Law and Justice Party. They've won since 2015 virtually every election, local election, parliamentary elections, even the European parliamentary elections, they've won. And the church has been really at the forefront of a solid conservative social activism in the best sense of the term. And when you get into the United States and Western Europe in general, I mean, I think we're just coming out of this sort of secularized slumber that we've been in for the last few decades. And I'm very hopeful of it because we're seeing some extraordinary demographic data coming in where basically conservative Christians have a massive fertility advantage over and against secular liberals. So in a nutshell, conservative Christians are having kids and secular liberals aren't. And we're finding that those kids 80% of the time retain that conservative faith into adulthood. And the more conservative, the more kids. So what we're finding is that Trump won in states that have somewhere around a 12% fertility advantage over the states that Hillary won. And demographers are saying that over time, that's going to have a dramatic impact. In fact, Eric Kaufman argues we're not far away. He thinks it's 2030. He's a University of London scholar. He thinks around 2030, you're going to see the culture wars in the United States shift radically in favor of the conservative side of things, just from the very fact that conservative Christians are having kids and secularists aren't. So I do think they'll find their confidence. I think it'll just be natural. There's just more of us than them kind of thing. That's what's going to happen. But until then, yeah, it's been really, really disappointing the way the church has been so subservient to so much of this.
We've, of course, the spark of Black Lives Matter everywhere was the killing of George Floyd or whatever happened there. There's a lot of the two guys, the police or the policeman and George Floyd apparently knew each other. I mean, there's a lot of whatever. Putting all that aside, obviously that was atrocious. My contention, my bone of contention on this is people should have been in the streets about a month or two earlier when in Mississippi, other states did this, but Mississippi, the police went to churches and elderly people sitting in their cars listening to preachers on the radio were given $500 tickets. They were knocked on their door. They were treated like criminals. If you're ever going to burn down a police station, that's when you should have burned down a police station. That's my feeling. Why has the churches been all over this?
Isn't it horrible? Yeah, or just any kind of, yeah, Supreme Court decision that just completely redefines the human person in a way that's, you know, just completely incompatible with Western Christian tradition. No question about it. I mean, Tucker Carlson has been on fire of late. You know, he's been pointing it out. He's like, look, you know, we've got two, when all said and done, we've got two groups of people here. We've got people who actually obey the law. They don't, you know, they don't protest, they don't destroy things, they don't break things, they go out and vote, they're responsible citizens. And then on this other side, you have this a collective insanity that's all about destroying society, and somehow our political class is on their side and continues to enjoy kicking around those who are complacent and compliant to the law, even when it's being abused. So yeah, I know what you mean. It's there is, when Christianity has been privatized, you get a problem, you see, because there's a marked difference between the private and the public. So the public has this sense of absolute obligation for everybody. You know, you think of taxes or something like that. We all got to do. Whereas private is just a personal kind of, you know, opinion on things. Public is objective. Private is subjective. Public has a definite moral culpability and responsibility. You could be arrested for things and blah, blah, blah. Whereas private seems to have just this moral relativism to it. When you privatize Christianity, you take it out of the realm, where the social realm, where it gains its objective, you know, moral frames of reference. And so,
what do you mean privatize? Explain it. What do you mean privatize Christianity? Explain that a little bit.
So if you go to Europe, for example, and you see the urban planning in a beautiful European city, you can imagine it right away. What's at the center of the European city? Virtually anyone. You can pick one,
yes,
at random. Yeah, you got a cathedral and castle, right? So the sacrament and the sword, right? Church and state. Cathedral and castle working together for a flourishing society, human society. What modern secular age has done is it's basically, if you look at modern urban planning, when I ask you what's at the center of a modern urban city, right, it's, you know, it's municipal buildings or
it's
maybe,
park.
Yeah, even, yeah,
yeah,
park, exactly, yeah, big corporate towers or whatever, and I ask you, well, where's the church? You're going to have to point me way over to the place of consumption, the places of consumption. So it's not unusual to see, oh, look, there's a dry cleaner, there's a pizzeria, and there's First Methodist. and so here's the problem you face just from a sociological perspective, the kind of mental map we just naturally create with our surroundings. What happens when you push the church into the realm of personal choice and private consumption and the like is you've robbed it of its ability to proclaim objective truth. In other words, First Methodist cannot claim objective truth any more than the pizzeria or the dry cleaner. So that's the problem you run into. And so this is what I think is behind why so many Christians in the end feel it's impossible for them to give, you know, to start marches and protests on a so-called truth, put in quotes, that is merely personal opinion that has no objective application whatsoever. That would require the church to be a public institution.
Well, you say push. We've allowed ourselves to be pushed.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it's
not,
course.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, we like to blame other people. We only need to look in the mirror to see our problems. The Bill of Rights, that's why the Bill of Rights is there, is to kind of protect this and to allow the church to operate freely. Now, whether the church or the people have the mind to respect these things, that's another issue entirely. But the Bill of Rights is supposed to at least allow the church and this idea and this religious thought, spiritual thought, to flourish and to be unobstructed. What we have seen, just like I said, the police in Mississippi going to the church parking lot, that's not the case. The Bill of Rights is the unifying document of America. There is no way you can get people, a majority of people, politically to agree on anything except, hopefully, the Bill of Rights. Your comment on any of that right there. We've got a couple minutes before the break.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That was beautifully said, Daniel. Absolutely. No, I see your hand, and I'll raise you too. That's right. We gave it up. I mean, I think it was Oz Guinness, the scholar, who said, you know, we didn't lose America. We slept through the 60s. So we gave it up. We literally let it go. And then when we woke up in the 70s, we woke up into what was like a dream. You woke into a woke dream. And no question about it. We don't even have civic education anymore. The schools have taken care of that. Republicans haven't done anything about the crazy, cultural Marxists that are teaching our kids today. Although Trump in his wonderful Mount Rushmore speech brought that up, that kids K-12 are taught every day to hate their country. It's an absolutely beautiful thing to say because it's true. I've seen it. I've been in academia for 20 years.
Wow. California is not the only state. I think there's another state that's regionally pushing this, but California is a state. It's a law. You teach four-year-olds that they don't have a gender. Your mom and dad gave you a gender, but that's not your gender. Then, you know, by the time, you know, if you have sensitive ears, ladies and gentlemen, just close your ears. But by the time they're 10 or 11, they're running relay races with condoms and bananas. I mean, this is the law, state law, quote unquote law in California. I mean, every church who calls themselves Christian at all ought to be on their soapbox screaming, get your children out of this demon infested environment. But they're not.
Right.
Nothing more to say, is there? I don't know what to say.
There you go. Amen and amen. Yeah, there you go.
Well, there's the break. We'll be right back more with Dr. Stephen Turley. Really nice to meet you. This is an interesting conversation. Stay right there. TurleyTalks.com is his website. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Power Hour.
Break the bond to Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
What in the world is this crazy Willard water?
It's a proprietary solution. It's a water additive that was invented by my grandfather, Dr. John Willard, and hence the name Willard water. Boosts a number of different things. We see most prominently that it's increasing the absorption, utilization, and storage of nutrients in the cells. So, for example, if people were drinking, we see a big boost in B vitamin absorption utilization. If you see it in plants, we see a big boost in their ability to absorb and retain fertilizers or nutrients in the soils. I think we see with things like microbes. If you used a microbe on soil, for example, to replenish the soil, and you sprayed our Willard water on it, go through that replenishing cycle much faster.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at theparamall.com. That's theparamall.com.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Paramol began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
With dozens of food and storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Humana Food Storage is nutritious, is GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high-fructose corn syrup, has no chemicals, preservatives, or soy. And Humana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. Call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com.
America made just for you. Food stores I love to eat. Yum.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease, it's just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Welcome back to the Power Hour. ThePowerMall.com has been our website for close to 20 years. Joyce started it. Of course, that's how we fund this operation. Where it's where we get the fuel to put in the tank to drive down this road of superhighway of American freedom and global freedom, really, is what we want. Happy, healthy, successful, and free as God intends you to be. That's our goal. Buy from the good guys. You don't need to support Amazon. Support us. We appreciate it. We deserve it. And you need to support us because independent thought is becoming scarce. And independent media. So this is what we're here, and voices like ours, Dr. Turley's. It's a pleasure to be associated with the people like this, and to be associated with you, audience. Never before in your life has your voice been so important as it is right now. Your conviction, your truth, the light inside you is power. And right now it's all on the line. Light and dark. What are we going to choose? Is it freedom? Is it control? Is it lies? Is it, what is it? Beauty? Where are we going? It's all up for grabs. And that's why the Power Hour is here, to hopefully inject some power into that contest, the animating contest of liberty, as our founding father said. So thepowermall.com, 877-817-9829, 877-817-9829, thepowermall.com. Getting back to Dr. Turley, turleytalks.com is his website. I hear the word social. If I hear that word social justice one more time, I think I'm going to spit. I think every time I hear it, I'm going to spit just out of principle. The definition of social justice from Google is equal distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges. This is a communist term. It's been used in Germany. It's been used in Nazi Germany. It's been used in communist China. why are we just accepting this word like it's some hallowed, sacred cause that we're after?
Yeah, it's a good question. I really have to say that I think in the end, it fits in with what we were talking about earlier. There have been studies done asking the question, what makes people liberal? what makes a person a leftist? How does this happen? And so that's the broader question. And the answer that's come back when all is said and done is it's not race, it's not economic status or anything like that. It tends to come down to whether or not you went to college. College-educated people, and I like to say more indoctrinated people, tend to be much, much more liberal than those who didn't go to college, right?
Wow.
So what we're finding then is when you go to a college and you're being taught by these cultural Marxists and you're being taught literally that you're not considered an educated person, you're a knuckle dragger, you know, if you don't believe that in social justice, if you don't believe you're not a woke warrior, if you don't believe this stuff, you're not a truly educated person. And when it comes to, especially with Ivy Leagues or when you're looking to get a career in entertainment and the media, you're taught you're not successful unless you believe this stuff. So the combination of being convinced that if you believe this stuff, then that is an indicator that you are educated and you are successful, it tends to be in many respects, I think, a bit of a status symbol for people. So that's why I think people are so quick to at least verbally embrace it. The question is, have they become social justice warriors in their hearts, or are they just cultural Marxists, right? They just So what we have is we have corporations that are all woke right now who at the same time employ slave labor in Indonesia.
So I just love getting lectured by Nike. I just love Nike lecturing me about slavery. And I just
That's
love
right.
That.
That's right, exactly right. And you remember Ricky Gervais, the comedian at the the Golden Globes, where he just roasted them with that. There is a growing populist backlash against our political class, and they see our political class as throwing out these empty slogans that mean nothing anymore, like social justice. And so I think a lot of people give lip service to it, but in the end, they don't do anything to move the needle a shred. And if you listen to like Black Lives Matter activists, that's precisely how they're talking.
So basically the conservative plumber who has worked all his life, made a good living and busts his butt literally to, you know, do his career. And then he wants to send his children to school so they don't have to maybe work as hard as he does. He mortgages his house. He, you know, is doing all those things. He's basically destroying America for this idea, this concept that, well, let me send my children to school and they'll be better and that'll help them and everything will be fine.
Yeah, we have to be careful. I mean, even Jordan Peterson has come out and said if you're sending your kid to a regular secular university for anything other than, say, like STEM, you know, if you're learning to be like a, you know, an occupational therapist or something like that, that's generally fine. You're not going to get into a lot of problems. But you start sending them to humanities department, you start sending them to their liberal arts department, whoa, I mean, they're going to be encountering some really radical Marxist thoughts. And again, they're going to be taught you're not educated unless you actually believe this stuff. Yeah, you got to be careful. So you definitely want to look at conservative Christian colleges, which are great because most colleges are shrinking in enrollment, but conservative Christian colleges are actually growing. They found their niche. Their niche is, you know, we don't teach this nonsense. So if you want to come and have a good education and plus have just a good and vibrant and flourishing culture, school culture, then come on over and hang out with us. And so we're finding, for example, Liberty has seen their enrollment grow, I think, by 400% just in the last 10 years. So they're exploding while these, you know, liberal left-wing colleges in the Northeast are closing every single year. There's one Harvard professor, business professor, said that their business models are so outdated, he expects about half of our nation's private colleges to fold within the next 10 years.
Well, Harvard will never fail because they got about a $5 billion under.
I think it's 40. I think it's a $40 billion endowment. Yeah.
I don't think they're going to fail.
No.
My plan was for my children as they get of age. I've started to see. I went to college myself, and I quit the day they tried to tell me that NAFTA was going to help America and sending our jobs and free. You know, I literally quit. I mean, that's a semester
so cool.
I quit. It's ridiculous. My plan was to get my daughters a snow cone shack. I mean, if you really want to learn something in the world, get a snow cone shack, relate to people, make money. I mean, that's productive to me.
Well, that's what George Gilder is doing, you know. He's like sort of the futurist, conservative futurist George Gilder, who's the most often quoted philosopher of Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan loved George Gilder. George Gilder is the guy who in the early 80s said, you see that big, bulky computer of yours? Well, in like 30 years, you're going to be able to fit that on your wristwatch. That's the kind of guy. And he is a huge proponent of exactly what you said. Forget college. Your kids don't need. He actually called it the 1517 Project after Martin Luther, where Martin Luther said, you know, you don't need a letter of indulgence to get into heaven. So George Gilder is saying, hey, you don't need a college degree to be successful. You don't need these things anymore. There's a new revolution, and it's called an entrepreneurial revolution. And so he's training young people 18, 19, 20, go straight into entrepreneurial work and get a business savvy and be able to create culture, create economy, and actually be productive in the world rather than run around and, you know, blow things up.
Tear statues down. Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah, tear statues down, exactly.
We've seen, obviously, the world has changed to some degree with this coronavirus. What the fall brings, I have no idea. I've been told certain things. We'll see if they come true or not. It seems like we're in a different America. Business-wise, my cousin hasn't even reopened her business because the government basically makes it impossible for it to. Maybe we need a little entrepreneurship more than ever. What do you make of any of this? Any of this COVID-related business undermining thing?
Yeah, I do think it's we're running into a massive tension with it in terms of general sentiment. And it's largely because, you know, all of this kind of 1984 Orwellian action requires a very modernist conception of the world. Modernity is an 18th century philosophy that says that there's basically a one-size-fits-all scientific rationalist way of looking at the world, and therefore we can put experts in charge to manage society and engineer society in a technocracy for the, quote, benefit of all, blah, blah, blah. That was popular in the 20th century. You know, we had three options for it in many ways. We had Western globalism, we had Soviet communism, we had the rise of Nazi fascism. Well, those are all falling apart. Those are all breaking up. And scholars are saying it's precisely because modernity has died in the hearts and minds of people. People are now postmodern, right? We've probably heard that term before, and we tend to associate it with sort of a moral and relativism.
Post-truth.
And, you know,
I've heard post-truth.
It's true for you.
World.
It's true for me and all that sort of stuff. But I don't think we've quite gotten a handle of the sociological ramifications of this, because all our institutions and the control that our political class has been able to exercise through those institutions actually assume scientific rationalist modernity as reigning in the hearts and minds of people. It doesn't anymore. And so more and more people, like Elon Musk, for heaven's sake, are coming out and saying, this is nuts. This is crazy. Why should this political class define, you know, what I do for myself and for my family? Who are you to say your job's essential but mine's not, and on? So there's a real questioning of this authority going on as well. It's a very complex time we're in, because we're having the overlap of this modernist, yes, I'm supposed to trust this technocracy, this political class, because somehow, this is C.S. Lewis pointed this out, the genius of the 1984 model, the genius of the modern world and with a whole technocratic elite engineering society, the genius was is that they convinced the majority of the population that we are most free when they are most in control. You got to let that hit you. It's really fascinating.
Let that wave, ladies and gentlemen, let that waft over you.
My favorite example of that is the cash assistance card that's issued by the state of Maryland, you know, what we call food stamps, right? The cash assistance card is actually called the independence card.
Oh, my God. Oh, my gosh.
So the more reliant you are on a
the more
political
independent,
class,
the more free you are.
Exactly. The more free you are. Exactly. So that's why when Joe Biden said, you know, back, I think it was in the, during the height of the Tea Party movement in 2010, he went out to, you know, black crowds and said, hey, they want to put you back in your chains. You see, the more you're reliant on us, the more free you are. The beautiful thing that really is happening is that's dying. That's collapsing. And a postmodern world is coming out that's saying, I don't buy that anymore. I don't believe that. Have you noticed, for example, like in the mid-20th century and into the 60s and so on, any kind of future oriented movie tended to be very optimistic, think Star Trek or whatever. Today, all future oriented movies are dystopias. Nobody trusts in this kind of insane, you know, modernist conception of the world where these technocrats rule everything and somehow we're the most free when we do that. No, that's breaking up. So that's good news.
I've said this many times on the broadcast. You know, this is the first time I've met you. You're a very intelligent person. I really enjoy your perspective. I want to get your perspective on this. I've said many times, socialism, communism, whatever we're seeing with the Democratic Party, this is akin to Luciferianism. And let me explain why. Lucifer said that, well, God's plan wants to give you free will. And he is saying that, well, him doing that is cruel. He is condemning you to misery. God has condemned you to misery by giving you choice. If you give me your choice, if you give me control over you, just like you said, then you'll really be free. You won't have to deal with all this. You give me your dominion and I will make you happy. I will make you free. That's
right.
Really, this is Luciferianism versus Christianity, Declaration of Independence.
Right. And also because it operates by the physics of power. So in the classical conception of the world, I like to call it just classical rather than pre-modern because I don't like to, I don't like to make modern the point of reference here, but just the classical Christian vision of the world. So it didn't even matter if you were dealing with, you know, say third century Christians or third century Hindus. It didn't matter. Wherever you were in the world, everybody believed the world was filled with divine meaning and purpose. And that meant every person born into the world was born into a divine obligation, where we were obliged to conform our lives into a harmonious relationship with that divine meaning and purpose. And church and family and community, those were all, you know, God-ordained institutions to help facilitate that kind of faithfulness. The modern world comes in and says, that's all bunk. That's all nonsense. There is no divine being or anything like that. The world's reduced solely to biological, chemical, and physical cause and effect. And so the world operates solely by power. And so what's important is that we use power in order to manipulate the world to our own ends and to our own desires. And so that's why they can look at us and say, you're most free as long as I'm in control. Whereas the Christian would say, in effect, you are most free when you are united with love incarnate. Christ is love, and love is a power that is not of this world. How does Christ conquer? He conquers by being totally conquered. He conquers by being completely and totally conquered and then transforms the ugliest instrument of death humanity has ever known into the most beautiful tree of life imaginable.
That's fascinating.
So what we have in our classical Christian frames of reference is we have the transformative gift to be free through the gift of love, and it overcomes power. Power is no we can use power, we can use authority, but we use it for the good and in accordance with love. Whereas in the modern world, there is no love. There is no love by definition because there's no divine meaning and purpose in this world.
Because there's no truth, because there's no absolutes.
And there's no absolutes, exactly.
One of the most, you know, I almost dote on the Founding Fathers, almost to a point of religion. But the uniqueness of what they accomplished, Isaac Newton, John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, both of them thought Isaac Newton was one of the greatest humans who ever lived. Why do they think that? Because Isaac Newton thought that I can have observation, I can experiment, I can look at the world, and I can then, by logic and what God has given me, I can figure out a truth. I can figure out what is the truth, an absolute. And so the Founding Fathers operated on absolutes. And the greatest political absolute statement is the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths. What do they say? We hold these truths to be self-evident. We don't even need to argue about it. And that was America. And now it's all situational morality in these schools. I'm just so disgusted with these. I don't know how. I am seeing a spark in the young people where they like liberty. They like freedom. They may not understand it. They may not, you know, for that matter, I don't know if many Americans understand it, but they want to be free.
Yeah, there's an organic element to it.
Yes.
Yeah.
How do we dig out of this when basically we're pouring water into a bucket and there's three holes in the bottom and the water goes out as fast as we can when we send our kid to these schools 8 hours a day?
Yeah. Well, again, it's great news here. I mean, one of my latest books is on the coming, I can't even remember what the name of it, the coming revival of Christian education or something akin to that. Where just punch in Turley and Christian education, you'll find it, right? You know, I can't remember. I write too many books.
Well, that sounds like a real keeper there, Doc.
That's it. The coming rise of Christian education. Oh, that's happened before. I always forget my book titles. What is so fascinating is that we are actually in the midst of a Christian educational renewal with the rediscovery of classical education, the very education of our
founding
fathers.
Define classical education. Define that. What is a classical education?
Yeah, classical education is a pedagogy that seeks to cultivate the true, the good, and the beautiful in our students, so as to be able to foster wisdom and virtue in their lives. So in the ancient world, all the way up again till say the end of the 19th century, you weren't an educated person unless you exemplified some sense of wisdom and virtue. Wisdom understood the divine meaning and purpose inherent in the world. You knew there was a difference between a baby and a ham sandwich, right? They're both good. They're both good, but if they were both falling and I rushed to save the ham sandwich, that's a bad. And it's a bad because I've dislodged my loves and my desires from God's economy of goods. Ham sandwiches are good, but babies are infinitely more good. And so with that divine schema of wisdom cultivated within me, then I can foster my loves to align with that divine schema, and that's called virtue. Virtue is learning to love what I should love and desire what's truly desirable so I can experience my highest human flourishing. And how do you do that? You read the great books. You study Latin and Greek. You study theology because you want to think God's thoughts after him. And we're finding that our students who go through this K-12 education have the highest SAT scores, bar none. They get into the best schools, and yet they're wise, they're virtuous. That's what a true education really is.
Hold on. You have some kind of education program for?
Oh yeah. Well. Yeah, so it's the classical school movement that I've just been a part of for many, many years.
Where can we find this?
You can go. The best place to go to is the Association of Classical Christian Schools. It's ACCS. And it's a national, technically it's an international organization. There were 10 classical schools in the nation in 1994. Today there are over 500. And you can
I imagine online that you can do homeschool. There's a homeschool program.
Oh, sure. There's going to be a homeschool element. The Association of Classical Christian Schools is primarily going to be brick and mortar, but there are other ones like, let's see, CIRCE, C-I-R-C-E, and the Society for Classical Learning. Those are two other organizations that you can go to. There's also Scholey Academy, which is an online homeschool. S-C-H-O-L-E. Our word for school is a Greek word, skoli, which actually means leisure, believe it or not. But leisure is not just like, you know, sitting in a hammock and, you know, and sipping a drink or something like that. Leisure in the classical world was when you could take a rest from labor, you know, because if you didn't, I mean, this is before the days of Amazon and Walmart and all that sort of stuff. If you didn't farm, you didn't eat, kind of thing. And the ancients said, but you've got to make sure that you take time for leisure. And what's leisure? It's doing things for their own sake. It's reading a good book. It's reciting beautiful poetry. It's encountering lovely music. It's gazing at the beauty of art. And in so doing, your soul is fed, and you can become a truly human person again. So these are the things. This is a renaissance that's going on right now, and it's a stunning one. So that's why I say I love to focus on the things that are blooming all around us, if God is still active. You know, keep in mind, Kanye West right now is probably the number one pro-life spokesman on the planet. Who would have ever thought this? God has a sense of humor. He's calling Planned Parenthood the devil's work and the tool of white supremacists like Margaret Sanger. You had 350 staffers of Planned Parenthood of Greater New York signed a letter openly declaring Margaret Sanger was a racist white woman. God can redeem anything. This Black Lives Matter movement is now getting the Democrats have given black people, these black activists, they've given them a platform to basically say whatever they want, and liberal whites are being shocked by what they're hearing. They're seeing them turn around and start to excoriate white liberals for putting things like Planned Parenthoods into the inner city. It's stunning stuff that's going on.
TurleyTalks.com is your website, T-U-R-L-E-Y. It's been a real pleasure meeting you. I've really enjoyed this conversation. You're a pretty sharp fellow there.
Thanks so much, Daniel. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, we have about 30 seconds. Last thought of encouragement or what have you for our audience.
I think in the end, the dynamics that are going in the world, as you know, crazy and insane as they seem to be, I think in the end, there's no place for the liberal left anymore. They are beginning to collapse. We're in good hands. The question is just how much trouble can they make in the meantime? And I think we're going to see a new conservative age in ways we never imagined.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you have your Bill of Rights on your refrigerator and Turley's words, Dr. Turley's words in your heart. We'll see you tomorrow, Dr. Group. Stay right there, Dr. Turley. God bless you, everybody. Happy, healthy, successful, and free as God intends you to be. The Power Hour. ThePowerHour.com. We'll see you tomorrow.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.